It's been a long time, and we shouldn't have left you, but we are back. It's the Cave of Solitude. I'm Eric Anthony.
Daphne J.
is with me. We are missing our good friend and co-host, Jay Siegel, but he is on a bit of a hiatus, a well-deserved vacation. But we're back. We were on a vacation ourselves.
Yeah, we were.
Where did we go?
Jamaica.
Yeah, man. We had a lot of... What do we eat a lot of down there? Festival.
We had the festival. We had the jerk chicken.
Yeah, man.
We had the oxtail.
It was good. Good things. Good time.
Yeah, it was very... I think it was well-deserved.
It was.
Everyone needs a well-deserved vacation break.
Yeah, and you know what? I was saying to you before, I don't know anybody as busy as that kid, Jay Siegel. I think he might be moonlighting as a superhero or something, because I can't ever get him to come over to do a podcast anymore. And now he's like not even in the country. So, but we wish him a good trip. And when he comes back, we're going to get right back into the swing of things. But the truth is, based on popular demand, people don't even want to hear me. They don't even want to hear Jay Siegel. They want to hear you.
Of course they do.
Yeah, you're our most popular host, co-host of the show.
It's my charm.
I was going to ask you, based on the intro music, something very interesting has happened. Something amazing, something unbelievable, unprecedented.
Something I said I would never do.
Something you said you would never do. What? Daphne J, what happened? Tell the people, what did you do?
I opened up my backpack on the train, and I found a book.
What book was it?
A graphic novel.
Obviously. And what graphic novel was it? Tell the people what you read.
I read a Marvel graphic novel.
Oh my gosh. Which graphic novel specifically was it?
I read Civil War.
There you go. Daphne J did it. It was my... my mission to get her to finally break free from her DC enslavement of reading only Batman or something with Batman in it. And in this book, there wasn't anything resembling Batman. How did you get through it? Save it later. Tell us later. But for now, I want to get into something new. For the first time, we have got some emails to read.
Ooh, la la.
Some fan mail. Yes. So, let's get into the thick of things here. Let me bring it up on my device. We have got our first email was from Little Sparrow. That's her name. That's what she's going by. And she sent an email in regards to our Weezer podcast that me and Jay Siegel did.
You know, I was going to say before you go on, I think you guys did, you guys got some good listens to the Weezer one. I think that was a popular.
Yeah, did you like it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I liked it.
Did you go and listen to all your Weezer albums after?
No.
No? Okay, well, do you want to read this email from Little Sparrow?
So, read it like a girl.
Yeah, well, read it like yourself in your own voice. That'll do.
Okay. this is from Little Sparrow, a fan, who says, "Guys, I just listened to your Weezer-themed podcast, and I gotta say, it was pretty fantastic. Look at that, eh?
Fantastic.
You inspired me to spend my entire workday listening to all the albums in order of release, which, at 10 a.m. with Buddy Holly raging in my headphones, has already significantly improved my day." Look at you, eh?
See that?
You put a smile on someone's face. "Music is memories, and some of my best are attached to the Blue album. A friend introduced me to all things Weezer when I was 15, and I was hooked. I love that Jay..." Oh, Jay has a fan.
See that, Jay?
"I love what Jay said about this album capturing the emotions of being a teenager, dealing with serious problems, but still feeling upbeat and invincible. I completely agree, but even as an adult, it still makes me so very happy to listen to this album. And totally, Eric, this album is road trip material. So good. Thanks for a rich and delicious analysis of what I consider to be one of the greatest bands of our time." Look at that, eh?
There you go. Signed, Little Sparrow. Thank you for the email. We appreciate all of the listeners' support. Keep sending them in. keep giving us ideas, feedback of what you like, what you didn't like. And we got another email. This is from friend of the show, Philly P. And he gave us a topic recommendation of what he maybe would like us to do for an episode. So Philly P says, "Hey, Cave of Solitude gang, longtime listener, as long as you've been on the interwebs, first time write in. Love all the personalities on your program, Eric Anthony, Jay Siegel, and Daphne J, your very own superhero team. Keep up all the good work." What do you think our team should be called? You think about that.
The Daphne J team.
No. So, I was listening the other day when I had an idea for a topic or a segment or whatever you want, even just an email reply. Everyone is always talking about their favorite superhero and their top five favorite DC characters, etc., etc. But that's been done. There's no real fun there. It's just a plain old list. Then my mind idled and started thinking about sports, as it often does, and that's when it hit me. What would it be like if you put your combined, if you combined your love of comics with sports? How do you know I love sports, Philly P? A starting lineup of comic book characters. Now, hockey is only five on the ice at a time, so that might really narrow your options. Plus, I figured I'd make it a little more interesting in terms of positioning. So let's do soccer. 11 on the field. Here's what I want to know. For each of you, create your own comic book character starting 11, taking into account the role on the team. A goaltender, defender, midfield, forward. Let's call it a 4-4-2 formation. So you don't just have 11 strikers that obliterate everyone, but you still have options, i.e. a defensive midfielder, offensive left back, attacking mid, striker combination, etc. This might have been a better idea conceived in my head when I explained it out than when I explained it out loud, but I still want to know. I'm curious now. Let's see your soccer superhero starting 11. Your dedicated and faithful cave dweller, Philly P.
It's challenging. So
that's cool.
That's cool. But what I want to know is he want us to put together a soccer team or have a formation like a soccer team for like a superhero battle?
I think it's a soccer team.
So who you would have on your soccer team? Do you have a starting 11 off the top of your head? Or you want to save this for an episode?
Let's save it because the Globetrotter there, the Jay Siegel...
He needs to put something together. Send us an email. We'll read it on the air. It's not my fault. He's not here traveling the globe. Okay. So I'm going to... Well, let's do it both ways. We'll do it so that if they were actually playing soccer against each other, a superhero team, and then we'll do it so that if there was like a battle, who would you want protecting your home, your city?
Okay. Just to whet.
Just to whet. That sounded so whet.
Just to whet the appetite.
Okay.
Choose one.
For what?
For anything. Just for goalie. Who would be your goalie?
Who would be my goalie?
Yeah.
Okay, you go first.
No, you go first.
No, you go first.
No, I told you to go first.
Okay, you want to play rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock? Just
kidding. Okay.
My goalie?
Yeah.
So I'm looking at it from...
Like, we'll give the list.
Okay.
When the time comes.
Okay.
We'll do the formation.
Okay.
But right now, top just of your head, your goalie.
Okay, so if I'm having a team protect my family, my home, my livelihood for some reason, my last line of defense, because that's what the goalie would be, right? Like, your last line of defense. I would want the Incredible Hulk protecting. Like, who's going to get through him? That's okay. Just rage. That's just power. Unstoppable. I mean, I obviously Superman is my guy.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I was Superman, but in net, like I'm picturing a goalkeeper. Who's getting through the Hulk? He's fast. He's not slow. He's not just like some slow monster. Kind of like I kind of see the Thing. Kind of be like it's clobber time, and he's just this big rock. The Hulk can move. He's got power. Who would you pick?
To defend my net?
Yeah. Who would be your goalie?
It would be the Flash.
The Flash?
Absolutely the Flash.
Okay.
He'd get there in no time. He would save every shot. Nothing would penetrate.
Okay.
Of course. No brainer.
The Flash, that's your boy. Okay.
And he's happy doing it. Nobody has to get angry or get like a Hulk smash. Like, this guy's just like, la la la. Pulling a couple of jokes here, you know, because they have to like trash talk. He could trash talk and do the job and get it done.
But when you think of a goalie, right, what's one of the things that they're allowed to use?
Their hands.
Right. Who's got the biggest paws? The Hulk. That fist coming up to punch a ball in a big crowd? Come on. And who would you want to be slamming the ground to protect your home before people can come through?
He's going
to
ruin the field.
He's going to make us live.
Okay, but you're going from the aspect of like both. Strategic, life-saving for me. I'm talking just a game.
Oh, wow. All right, we'll get back to this. We'll get back to this. We got a lot to talk about.
Just a taste, folks.
Okay. So, anything else you want to touch on before we dig into the Civil War graphic novel for this week? Have you been reading anything other than...
Last time we were on the air...
Okay.
We touched a little bit on the fact that I also ventured and I ended up reading Gotham Central.
Okay.
The first volume, book one.
Okay.
In the Line of Duty, which was very interesting because it doesn't have anything really to do with any superheroes per se, but it has to do with the GCPD mostly. Okay. And I was hesitant about getting into it because there wasn't any real appearance. There wasn't going to be any appearances by Batman.
Okay.
Or no story was going to be revolving.
You weren't going to be in the Batcave.
No.
Yeah.
But I thought I would give it a shot, and I was pleasantly surprised with how the story unraveled, and I found it a little hard to follow who was who, though, in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because the drawing in this graphic novel is, it's not no Jim Lee type of art.
It's very noir, like it's very detective, gritty. It's not bright colored. It's kind of muted. The colors are kind of muted. And sometimes it's hard to, at first, to get to know distinctive features of the characters. But it does come along.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Once you really get into the thick of the story, it's a page turner.
Yeah, yeah. 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 So I enjoyed that a lot. Do you know when they did this? Like when
this
came out?
Would have been, based on, well, Ed Brubaker and Greg Rucka were a tag team writing this book, and they both did a good portion of some Batman books during this time. I think it was maybe 2002, 2003, around that time. But Ed Brubaker is very well known for what he did on Captain America, and what you read in Civil War, he did all the Captain America storylines during that time. He's the one who brought back Bucky, actually. So this was before that. So he was really cutting his teeth writing some Batman books with Greg Rucka, and they did a great job on Gotham Central. They won awards for it. What was your favorite part about this book? Like, because it is in the realm of Batman's world, in his city.
Mm-hmm.
But what was it that you liked specifically? What stood out for you?
When Batman would appear.
Yeah.
I know it seems like the go-to obvious answer coming from me, but it really was. It's almost like the fact that he would appear and just show up, and the way he would look in the shadows. Like,
very quickly.
The officers in this world, they knew and had an understanding. And even though illegally they couldn't, it was illegal for them to even touch the bat signal and all of that, like those intricate, I guess, bylaws that they had to go by. There was still this unspoken understanding and respect, but at the same time, there was certain officers, and I forget who it was, but he felt that it was his responsibility to find justice and not allow the bat to intervene, because I thought that was interesting. But even in, I think Batman, from what I remember, because I did read it a while back, it's almost like Batman understood that, But when it was getting out of hand and they weren't dealing with it, Batman's like, enough.
Yeah, okay, I'm stepping in.
And then, it was just a two-second appearance, kind of like he showed up with the enemy. And the cop is like, we don't want your help, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you're welcome. And he just leaves. So, yeah. Like I said, I know it seems like the obvious thing to say, but it was when Batman would appear because you would see the emotions of these officers come to light a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I really liked when you got to get into the life of these officers that you don't ever really explore too much, other than maybe Commissioner Gordon, to see the ins and outs of their life, with the stuff they have to deal with, the losses that they have, when they get one-upped by Batman, what it does for them. It was kind of cool to see that. And it makes me, I mean, I haven't been following Gotham as much as I've followed The Flash or The Arrow show, and Gotham has gotten better, but when I read this book, it made me dislike Gotham a little bit more than I already was, because I was like, they had the premise right here. They had this fantastic premise of a book. They don't have to follow it exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wouldn't want them to copy this book, because when you adapt, it's better than copying it exactly. Because there's this fanboys like, that's not what happens in the comics. They're supposed to do this, but that's not an adaptation. Adaptation has changes. It plays a little bit with the source material.
Yeah.
But it would have been cool for them to explore the Gotham police force in this capacity, where we've got to solve this problem when the lights are out. Because if we don't solve it when the lights are out, that bat's going to come out and make us look like we can't do our job.
Yeah.
And even if they had like a little 2-minute clip at the end of a show with Batman just saying, here's Mr. Freeze, or here, it's done.
Yeah.
It would have been amazing.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't even have to know who plays Batman. It's just him in the shadows.
I don't even think they should ever tell you who is Batman. It should just be a shadow.
Yeah.
And like,
that's him.
That's him.
That's wicked. Yeah. Yeah, it'd be so cool. But it is what it is. It's still a great series. We've got all four of the graphic novels whenever you want to dig into it again. The second one is fantastic as well. The Joker's in it. It's really cool. Yeah, Greg Rucka wrote the No Man's Land that you're also reading right now. He's the author to that. The novel, as well as the comic books that came out, the single issues. And yeah, I can't say enough about Ed Brubaker. I never realized how much I actually liked his work. But when we were, like you said, we were in Jamaica, I was reading the tie-in to Captain America to the Civil War. And it was, he did like 5 years plus on Captain America, and it was fantastic, the stuff I was reading. I recommend Ed Brubaker's books to anybody. Okay, so moving on from Gotham Central, always going back to DC and Batman, you always got to sneak it in there. Let's stay on DC just for a little bit. Let's go into the TV world. Because me and you have been watching a lot of Arrow.
Yeah.
And we caught up, finally.
Yeah.
We were on the plane coming back home from Jamaica, and there was an app that they had on the plane that allowed you to watch movies and TV shows. And I said to you before we got on the plane, I go, how awesome would it be if we got on the plane and they had Arrow? And we got on the plane,
and they had Arrow.
They had the last four episodes we needed to watch of season two.
Yeah.
And we did it. We watched all four on the way back home.
Because we were killing it on Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
We were just back to back to back.
And it was awesome.
Yeah. It made those 4 hours go by fast.
What do you think of how far you've caught up to now without over spoiling it? I mean, if you haven't watched this week's episode, you're crazy.
Yeah.
But what do you think so of that show?
In the beginning, I think I remember I was like, what are we watching?
Mm-hmm.
Meh.
Mm-hmm.
Love it now.
Love it.
Yeah, really well written. The nuggets, as you like to say it, or as everyone likes to say, the way they introduce characters, the consistency of them. Mm-hmm. I like it a lot.
You see, that's a perfect example of an adaptation. Because mm-hmm. I don't think certain characters that are in that book, or in that show, sorry, were ever main characters in an Arrow story. Like, there's definitely...
You would know better than me, but...
Like, for instance, there's Deathstroke is a prominent character in Oliver Queen's life.
Yeah.
And from what I know of Slade Wilson, I've always associated him with the Teen Titans. He's a teen... That's where I kind of know his background from. But it was adapted so well into the Arrow show that mm-hmm. it almost feels... It's like, yeah, that works. Mm-hmm. That's really good. And even the tie-in with the League of Assassins, everyone knows Ra's al Ghul is associated directly mm-hmm. with Batman and Talia, but the way that they tied it into the universe and referring to Nanda Parbat and all that stuff is just like...
Yeah.
It's so satisfying as a comic book fan who knows all of these little things, like you said, but bring it into the universe in a way that works, that makes sense. I'm really enjoying
this
show.
The only gripe I have about this show is that I feel like there's a lot of references, or they're biting off of Batman. There's a lot of...
Yeah, and you know what? It's...
And it's probably an... What is it? Homage? Oh, yeah. I was going to say omen. An homage to the best, you know. But they referred to Oliver as a detective. No, you're not. Batman's the greatest detective. He's not a superhero. He's a detective. He's the best detective in the world. But they referred to him, I think it was about 3 episodes ago, in the season 3, where they say that you follow clues. You're a detective. They actually said that.
Yeah, and you know, Batman is known as the greatest detective in the DC universe. But the truth of the matter is, the Flash is a fantastic detective. Probably could go toe-to-toe with Batman. He's a forensic detective. Oliver Queen has to be a detective.
I understand what you're saying, like, but they're not known.
No, they don't have a comic named after them called Detective Comics.
No, it's not even that. Okay, Barry Allen or whichever Flash is being played, they're not known for their detective skills. He's going to be known because of how fast he can run. He's the fastest man in the world. Who's the other guy? Like, again, every superhero has this thing that...
They're known for.
And yeah. That's... And being a detective, being someone to outsmart a villain, or to have, you know, be 2 steps ahead, whatever the case is, that's always a Batman thing.
Yeah.
And I just feel... Which, again, I think it's great that they implement it in the show, because I feel like... And I think you've said this in an episode of yours with Jay Siegel in the past. If they could just... They could definitely do a Batman show if they wanted to.
Yeah.
They would just have to do it right. But it's possible. Because all the introducing the League of Assassins, other superheroes, the way Oliver Queen came to be with the training and the torture he endured, mm-hmm. all that stuff, it's very, very possible for a Bruce Wayne or a Batman to be in a realistic world.
Yeah.
But...
And they've recently said, on the point that you just made, that they're never going to reference Metropolis, Superman, Gotham, or Batman in these shows. Like, they'll never go to those cities because they're saving them for the silver screen for the movies. And it's a shame that they're closing that off, because you really see all the possibilities that they could do with this, but...
Yeah, but they're trying to do that with Gotham, and it's crap.
I don't know. I
gave up on Gotham, like, 2... Like, what was it, 20 minutes in? And then I was like, okay, I'll keep to it. I couldn't handle it after, like, 3 episodes. I can't.
I get it.
And again, I think going back to, especially to Arrow, having seen how well it's been developed and how everything's played out, it's...
And the thing, too, for you is that you know how Batman's story is supposed to go. You know when characters are supposed to be introduced. Right. You know how old people should be.
Exactly.
But for Arrow, you've got no attachment to it. So this is your Arrow story, right?
you're not looking at it like some people looked at it like Arrow doesn't kill, Arrow doesn't do this.
Yeah, but they addressed that.
Right, but for people who watched it, but people who watched the first season said, "I'm not watching the show. I'm not giving." And everyone's like, "No, no, it's good. You got to give it a chance." Like, nope, that's not my Arrow, because they feel like it, right. So sometimes you gotta roll with it and see where they take it, because Arrow significantly changed in the second season.
Yeah.
Right from the first.
Also, my gripe with Gotham is that I find there's a lot of over actors.
Yeah.
And the Jada Pinkett, I'm very disappointed. What's with the just over the top acting? It's not necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not a fan of her character myself.
Sometimes the villains in Arrow, I find, also do that.
Yeah, but they're just there for a week.
But they're exactly like I'm like, meh, you're just here for the day. Don't worry about it. But the long term actors, I find it's pretty. I like it. I enjoy it a lot watching it. And
one of your favorite shows?
I don't really watch a lot of
TV
shows.
What else would trump it right now with what you've been watching? What are you laughing at?
I like The New Girl. Okay. That show's hilarious.
So New
But I don't watch a lot of TV shows to say it's my favorite out of... Okay. Like, I have, like, what, three that I watch? I don't really watch all that much.
Okay. So it's in your top three, though?
Well, I guess, right now. It's entertaining.
Okay. Fair enough. There's something that you've mentioned to me about Arrow that really bothers you. Not about... Nothing about the quality of the show, but something that happens in the stories that drives you nuts. But we'll get back to that, because it'll come through in our discussion of Civil War. Let's get into Civil War. So, Daphne J., tell us about your experience of reading your first Marvel graphic novel. Did you enjoy it?
Did I enjoy reading it?
Did you enjoy the story? Did you like it? What did you think of it? Give us your thoughts.
I enjoyed reading it.
Okay.
It was a page turner. Okay. It got my attention, and quite early into the story, did it get me involved?
Okay. You want to give the audience? I'm sure many people know if they're tuning into this. And Civil War is a very popular topic right now, again, because they're going to be making the next Captain America movie. It's going to be Civil War with him and Iron Man.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. That's why. Also why I wanted to cover this book, because it's a hot topic right now. It's going to be... It's definitely in the zeitgeist of everybody's, you know, world, where in pop culture it's big again. You want to give them a synopsis of the story a little bit?
Basically... Something goes wrong in which the public feels that the heroes in this world are a danger to the world. And so some heroes think that it would be best for these superhuman heroes to register and work for the government and expose their identities, and there are those who highly disagree with the idea. And so thus begins this civil war between these friends.
And who's on both sides? Tell the people how they're split. Who's leading which side?
We have Captain America, who is the leader of the Avengers. Yes. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm new to this Marvel world. And then we have Tony Stark, who is always, I guess, been involved with government, right? Or always, people know who he is. He has nothing to hide. And he's on the opposing end of that. He's all for registering and exposing identities and being behind and supporting the government.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Did I pass?
Yeah, you pass. No. What brings them to that point is an event in the very, very first panels of the book where they're filming a television crew is
like
filming
a real world type reality TV show thing.
A superhero real world type of show.
Yeah.
And they're trying to boost their ratings, so they they zone in on a house that is actually room and board for a team of villains. And they're all like C-list, D-list characters that nobody really knows or pays attention to. So this young group of characters, the New Warriors, that's what the show would be called. They go in and try to attack these villains. But they're out of their league. The villains are a little bit more powerful than they are. Just when they think that the heroes think that they've got it under wrapped and have won the day, something goes completely wrong. And the last guy that they try to take in, he's I think his power set is some sort of, not atomic, but he blows up.
Right.
He can cause bombs to occur. And they blow up a school where a bunch of innocent children die.
It's like a community.
Yeah, a whole community gets affected by it. And Tony Stark goes to the funeral of one of the little boys that had died in this tragic event. And the mother of this child spits in his face and says, "You guys have been causing these type of problems for so long.
It's your fault.
You're so irresponsible. You think that, you know, because you have power, it gives you the right to just do whatever you want. You're not following any laws, any protocol. You're not police officers. You're just a bunch of bullies, basically. Yeah. And whenever you guys come through, you leave in your wake all of this destruction and you don't care." And it's a valid point in a way, right? When you think about it, when you look at superhero stories or movies or whatever the case may be, they're always presented in this way where they come through, they fight, buildings fall, collateral damage never really gets discussed of who would get hurt in something like that. The people were complaining about it with the Man of Steel movie, right? Mm-hmm. Like Superman comes through, destroys Metropolis, and well, you know, yeah, okay, you stopped the villain, but how many did you kill in the process? And this book deals with that directly. So it brings to light an interesting point of, if you do have a certain amount of power or ability, what rights do you have? What don't you have to be responsible for at that point? So who would you agree with in this? Because once this woman talks to Tony Stark, the mother, it hits home for him because he feels bad for what happened. He's not trying to be cruel on the surface, right? He's trying to do the right thing and allow these superhuman or these superheroes to still do their job, but do it under the law, right? Do it legally, as it were, with responsibility. So what would you think would be your, what side would you go on in something like this? If this was happening in your world, what would you say it needed to be done?
Maybe it's easy for me to say what I'm going to say because it's not ever really going to happen. I understand and I see that she has a valid point. It is a valid point. You know, and even with the things that happened today when, heck, even if there's like a gas leak like we had today, streets get shut down, it's an interruption, it's an inconvenience, it becomes mayhem. So I get what she's saying, and it's true. There's a lot of innocent people that get affected, but I would side with the team to not register and to keep their identity secret.
Why?
I think because, like what I said before, the fact that they give everything, they give their lives to random strangers because they can. They have that, the power to be able to do what no other Joe Schmo can. That in itself is very selfless?
Yeah.
And heroic. But at the same time, because they give so much, everybody's entitled to privacy. Everyone has that right.
Okay.
And it's unfortunate that these things happen when this chaos, you know, occurs in their cities, but it's not on, they're not looking to fight in your city. It's this crazy villain who thinks it's a good idea and it would be fun to take a hostage or to, you know, do a burning building kind of situation. Like, they want to make the mess. They're handed this problem. They're dealt these cards, and they have to work with what they have. You know what I mean? So it's not Tony or Captain America or Spider-Man looking to cause problems. This is just how it is.
But in the case of this situation, this news crew was trying to get ratings. Those villains weren't, they were just chilling out in their house, exactly. Right?
Yes.
So
but those, just because you can't blame a whole race or a whole nationality or a whole group of people for the idiotic actions of one individual.
Right.
You can't do that.
But the issue that they're trying to get at is, fine, you guys want to do good, but anybody, the point that they're trying to make in this book is that just because you have these powers, just because you have this ability, doesn't give you a right to just use them at whenever you want to. Because that becomes the problem, right?
Like, but when is the right time to use them? If someone's about to get hit by a Mack truck and I know I can get to them before something happens, I'm not going to go out of my way to go and help them?
And what Tony Stark is saying, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
I know you are, and you're pissing me off. Because I'm telling my point and you're still trying to come at me, bro.
No, because this is what it's meant for, to discuss it, right? If you have that ability, what the government is saying is register. You could still do what you want to do.
Yeah, but they want to take my identity from me.
But this is for the public to feel safe. In order
does
for
it matter? It doesn't matter the color of my skin. Doesn't matter if I'm male or female. It doesn't matter if I have these abilities, and I'm sharing them to benefit the public. What does it matter if you can see my face or not? I'm still going to be doing what I do.
But the point they're trying to make is some of these people, like even heroes within these stories, they fight each other. And some of them, you know, I have this ability to do it, so I'm going to stick my nose in, right? So yeah, it's selfless. Yes, it's me being heroic and having these abilities and using them for good, but not everybody always uses them for good all the time. So what they're saying is, we don't want there not to be superheroes.
Yeah, but doesn't...
So like, a police officer comes to your door, right? What is the first thing you want for proof that this person...
It doesn't mean they're not corrupt.
Doesn't mean that they're not corrupt.
A uniform or a badge doesn't tell me anything about that person, because sometimes the government's even more corrupt than the people that are just trying to do good.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Next topic.
It's not the next topic. The whole
I'm so cheesed
is,
right now. Why? I told you. I've been telling you 5 times. But I'm pro...
Captain America.
Captain America, no, leave me alone. You don't need to know my business. I'm here to help you. And then I go home.
Don't you find it interesting that it was Captain America, who was the one saying to Tony Stark, I'm not going to be the one to register or tell my fellow teammates to register. And the interesting thing about Captain America is everybody knows who he is.
I know.
He's Steve Rogers. Everyone knows. He doesn't have that secret identity, right? And it was interesting that this guy who represents America, everyone would think, oh, he would just be a government's water boy. You know, he would just do whatever they wanted him to do. Whatever America says, he's going to go and fight for. But that's what I really like about Captain America is that he's not truth, justice, and the American way. Whatever America does, I stand and support it.
Yeah. I was just going to say the same thing.
He lives by principles of...
absolutely.
This is what we've... It's brought out in the Captain America movie perfectly. He says, I don't want to kill anybody. Mm-hmm. I don't like people picking on the little guy. Mm-hmm. I don't like bullies. Mm-hmm. And I love that about Steve Rogers. Mm-hmm. Is that, he went...
See, without his powers and with his powers, he's still the same person.
He's still a hero.
Yeah.
I love that about Steve Rogers. And Captain America is created with the intent of, back in World War II days, to be a symbol of America, patriotic, fighting in the war. But really the essence of that person, of that man, isn't about that. He's not about killing. He's not about going to war. He is a soldier. We know that. But it's about defending the little person who can't defend themselves and giving them freedom, a freedom and a peace that is not mandated by what the government says freedom and peace is. Or in this case, what Steve Rogers was saying was that you're forcing people to do this.
Yeah.
And that's like fascism. You know, forcing them, putting, if they don't do it, they're in jail. They're criminals. And that's not right. You can't force them to. Because what is, in the case of a character like a superhero, right? This is all obviously, we got to suspend our disbelief right now because it's a superhero. It's not real. But what is the reason they have these secret identities in the first place?
To protect the ones they love.
Right.
It, like,
they're in it, and what?
That's a no-brainer. Eric, it's like even, I mean, if we wanted to go back and forth, it's like cops going undercover. They're not going to say who they are. They need to play the role to get the job done, to put bad guys behind bars. What's the difference?
Yeah.
That's what I say.
Yeah, no, it's that's the thing, is that it's so polarizing, right? What people's ideas should be. I'm all about the traditional superhero should have secret identities and protect their families and their loved ones, and they're selfless.
So you would be Team Captain America?
I love Captain America. I love the fact that...
So in this story, yes, you're Team Captain America.
Yeah. Because of the... There's so much more in Civil War. The storyline of Civil War was such a huge event that went through the entire Marvel Universe. Like, there was an X-Men Civil War. Spider-Man was a huge part of this story.
Mm-hmm.
There was Fantastic Four crossovers. Every title was affected by this event. It was... all through. So the ramifications of it still sometimes are referred to now in comic books. That's how big of an event it was. So, but it was interesting to see both sides were right and wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You couldn't really disagree with what Tony Stark was saying to an extent.
I think Tony had good intentions.
Right, exactly. But get to that point.
Yeah, he was a little got out extreme. Of control. Yeah.
Right? And they were becoming worse.
Yeah.
They were just, you know, literally a civil war. They were fighting each other to prevent this.
They had
this.
Like moles in their things. They had, people were dying.
Yeah.
They murdered someone. Exactly. No one went to jail for it. There was no justice for this person.
Right.
It was a complete mess.
It became a hypocrisy.
Yeah.
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 What did you think about, this was a huge deal at the time. It was kind of, they got rid of it really quickly in the storylines of Spider-Man. But what did you think about him revealing himself? Like, that was crazy.
I was really hoping that he wasn't going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I was almost hoping it was going to be somebody else just mm-hmm. to throw the public off. Because in the end, anyone can pretend that they're a superhero. Anyone can go and say, this is what I do.
Yeah.
I'll sign up. Sign me up. How is anybody supposed to know that they can or really have abilities to do this?
Yeah.
Nobody knows. They're going to show up and get a paycheck. Apparently, they were going to be on a payroll.
Yeah.
From the government.
Yeah.
So I was kind of hoping that it wasn't going to be Peter who reveals himself. But when he did,
we're shocked.
I was like, what?
Yeah, and at the time in the book, he was like really, really close with Tony Stark before this had happened. He had actually gone to live, I think, with him, Aunt May, and Mary Jane. They went to live in Tony Stark's penthouse or an Avengers mansion. So he was really close with Tony Stark at the time. So it must have put him in a tough predicament to have to decide on something like that. But yeah, it was huge news when he, even in like, just pop culture, like newspapers, news coverage. People were talking about Spider-Man unmasking himself and the world would know that he was Peter Parker. And they changed it really quick. They retconned it out of the stories. It was kind of... It was interesting what they were going to do with that, because here was a guy that everybody now was going to gun after, right? So many people wanted to get after Spider-Man and his loved ones. And it was the best... One of his most powerful things that he had in his possession was a secret identity.
And he was so... I think they even reference it in the book that Spider-Man has always been very private about his identity.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, again, disappointed...
Excuse me.
I was disappointed that he would even go for the idea of unmasking himself, because his primary concern has always been his family.
Yeah.
Because they're so fragile. He's not like a Bruce Wayne, I'm bringing Batman again, or Tony Stark in this matter, in this instance, where he comes from money, where there's security, where there's financial security. Yeah. You know what I mean? He doesn't have none of that. He's just another
resources.
He's just another guy. What, middle class? Maybe not even that.
Yeah.
And now he's basically put a target on himself and then his family.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought it was a bit. But maybe that's the reaction that the writers wanted, right? They wanted the audience to feel that, no, he did not just do that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
tell me.
I think you've told me in the past that, I mean, I hope one day to get to the status of podcasting.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm getting at?
No.
Okay. See when he reveals himself.
Okay.
And you see how all the news reporters are all around. You have CNN, BBC, all the mics are on his face. Yeah. There's MSNBC.
Yeah.
Then.
Comic Geek Speak. Good eye.
Isn't that someone else's podcast?
You were listening to it today.
Is he the guy with the radio voice?
No, no. That you were listening to when they were talking about Batman and the ages of Batman. Remember I had you listening? That's Comic Geek Speak. They're probably one of the first major well-known podcasts from this era, actually, 2005, 2006. They've been around for a while. One of my favorite podcasts. They've got over, 2,000 episodes.
We need to be that, and we need to make it into a comic book. imagine you get the silhouette with the headphones.
Imagine.
In one of those mic box thingamajiggers.
That'd be awesome.
Let's put it out there. Petition.
We need to get more listeners, though. It's going to take a lot more listeners.
Did you see that the first time around?
I did not see that the first time around.
Did you see it the second time around?
No. You know when I saw it? When you had mentioned to me that there was something interesting when Peter revealed himself, and I had no idea what you were talking about, and I'm ashamed because I listen to that podcast almost every day.
I remember when we were setting up our podcasts and everything and doing the iTunes thing and la la la, and we were checking out all the other podcasts, and I remember this specific logo. And I do recall you saying that they either had tons of listeners and as well as that they were one of the ones that you would listen to. So when I saw that, I'm like, what?
See, we gotta stop talking about them. They got their own listeners already. You gotta talk about Cave of Solitude. Never mind those
guys. I'm just saying that if listeners, if you're out there, get more of your friends to listen, and then we can do this. We can be on a mic box.
In a comic book.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's the goal. That's the ultimate goal.
Okay,
all right.
High five to these Comic Geek Speaks people, because they're making it. Let's do it.
They've made it.
You know, I want to get there.
You want to get to that point?
Yeah.
Okay. We got to get big time. How
did they do that?
It takes work. It's full-on dedication and connections and knowing people and your co-host being available.
Also, one more question.
Ask me.
I thought Daredevil was blind.
He is blind.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, huh?
Well, why is he wearing glasses? When Nick Fury gives them alternate secret identities, so he says, my name is Cooper Payton, and I'm an engineer from Long Island.
Yeah, he's blind. He's
wearing glasses.
Yeah.
And then he completely... And then when he's talking to... Who's this now? This guy. This other superhero.
He's Power Man.
Goliath.
Oh, is that Goliath? Okay, Goliath.
He's looking at him while speaking.
Well, he knows where people are.
So that hasn't changed? This is not like a new 52 for DC? No. Like, their stuff hasn't been on...
No. Marvel doesn't do stuff like that.
Don't look at me and smile like I don't know what I'm saying. No, I'm not.
I'm saying that Marvel never has to
undo what they did.
Yeah, they're pretty strong in what they're doing. I think they might be doing that in the future. They might be rebooting it, but not because they're struggling or they want to tell new stories with 3D. I think they just want to.
Okay, anyway, but as a Marvel newbie, I just had a couple of things that I wanted
to clear up. Daredevil is blind.
All right.
Daredevil's blind.
He's still blind. Always has been blind. Okay, fine. Yeah. The glasses threw me off.
Fair enough, fair enough. I get exactly what you're saying when I look at those panels myself.
But does the public know? Do his enemies know he's blind?
Not when he's Daredevil. They don't
know
that
he's blind. That's what I'm saying. No. So how would that be an advantage of
his?
His wearing glasses as if he's...
I think it's just in this situation right here. When they're trying to come up with different identities.
All right.
Yeah, I think that's all it is.
That's all.
What did you think of the actual interiors of the book? The art, the pacing, storytelling? What did you think of Steve McNiven's art in this? In comparison to all the DC stuff that you've read, I'm sure that it's not...
I think it's good. Mm-hmm. I like it. Obviously, mm-hmm. better drawing than what I can ever do. Personally, I don't think there's anything special about it.
No, you don't think so?
I don't know. Not, I mean, my personal opinion.
Okay, that's fine.
There's detail. I see that.
Yeah.
But,
nothing stands out for you. Nothing that would make you, I want to put this on my wall.
Maybe, and perhaps it's because, and this is no offense to the artist, but maybe because I'm not as familiar with these characters, so I don't know what they're supposed to look like. I don't know if there's been a costume change. I don't know. I don't know them. Mm-hmm. So what I see is, I'm going to accept what I see, right? Because it, I figure it is what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just what I think.
Okay. Do you feel it's too clean for you? Like, it's very, very high definition, very clean, very expressive, but nothing... It almost seems digital in comparison to maybe what you were reading with Gotham Central just before this, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everything is
very clear. I do have to say... having said all of that, I do find that the expressions in the eyes of characters is very deep.
There you
go. It's lots of expression.
Yeah.
That I have to say. And I find that they do a lot of close-ups in the eyes. And I guess because there's so much emotion and so much friction between the characters. And mm-hmm. so you actually are able to see... their position within this situation, how they feel towards it, their disappointment, their frustration, their anger, their fear. I find that there's a lot of expression in the eyes, mm-hmm. lots of close-ups, mm-hmm. but overall, I stand by what I said before. I guess that's all I can say about that.
Okay, how about the writer, the writing of it? The pacing, did you find it easy to follow?
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked that. I think especially for it having been something that I've never ventured in, it like I said, it was very easy for me to pick up mm-hmm. and get what was going on. So I appreciated that. I thought it was pretty easy. It wasn't too wordy, but it wasn't a lot. It wasn't like blank pages among like...
Lots of splash pages and just like action shots. There's a lot of story still to be told.
Yeah.
And there's so much. I mean, we're just skimming the surface, barely skimming the surface of how good I think this book actually is. All the things that happen with the auxiliary character or the ancillary characters in this book that are huge plot points. When you think of the Fantastic Four and how they were divided in this situation where... Yeah, you know, Reed Richards is fully supporting Tony Stark with the Thing, and his wife is in complete disagreement with how he's going about it. How Sue Storm does not like the way Reed Richards is helping out Tony Stark with these little secret plans that they have. And
yeah, but from the sounds of it, it sounds like this Reed Richards guy was a douche to begin with.
Yeah.
Because he seems like he was from the spoiler, from the note that she left for him when she decided to walk away from her family because of the distrust and the disappointment that she had because of what he was involving himself in.
Yeah.
She basically had said that all of their marriage, he's pretty much neglected her.
Yeah, he's been so obsessed with his work.
And so driven to just get his job done, but he's never really there for his kids. He's not there for her. Meh.
Like. Yeah, he's a bit of a douche. Yeah, Reed Richards is a little bit. He's just one of those guys that. Like, is your priorities right, dude? Like, really?
Mm-hmm.
You got family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For and someone is who is.
As a
who,
smart.
Who is. What's the word I'm looking for? Who is titled to be a superhero and will put his life on the line for just any total stranger, but he won't give his family the time of day.
Yeah.
It. Yeah. So.
That's what I mean. Like, there is so much emotion also behind the events that were happening that really make it. You invest a little bit into it as well. It's not just like, oh, here's one side, here's their side. Battle. Okay, this side wins.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot that was weighing on what would happen for people on both sides. Like, families were splitting up.
Mm-hmm.
Families were being put in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man switched sides halfway through because he saw that Tony Stark didn't have the best interests at hand. So he went and joined Cap's side after he had revealed himself. So he was already, mm-hmm. you know.
And then they made that, spoiler, and then they made that Thor clone.
Yeah, and the Thor clone killed one of their teammates of so many years. Like, it became a real mess.
Yeah.
So.
The fact that they would incarcerate some of their friends.
Yeah,
they would put them in like super high voltage, high security, because obviously they're superheroes. They could just come out of
forever. They were putting them in there.
Like, yeah,
in this.
It was so backwards.
Yeah.
So yeah.
So.
It's a good read.
Being a first time, this is your first Marvel book. I'm sure so many, like you said, many of these characters are brand new to you. Was it easy for you to follow along, considering that you didn't know all of Daredevil's history or everything that was happening with the Fantastic Four? Did you still feel like, you know what, even though I don't know all of that back history, I can still jump in and read this book? Like, would you recommend this to a newbie?
I couldn't. Before I answer your question, and kind of answering your question, I found myself reading this and seeing these characters and I just had the word in my mouth.
Get it back.
I would read and see these people and I couldn't help but think of characters in the DC world.
They're like a counterpart of who they would be.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like I said, I'm not familiar with Marvel the way I am with DC. So I don't know who came first.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt, because I'm a Marvel fan, I'm like, they're biters.
Fan.
Like, everything, their costumes or the way that they had. I don't know. It was like, I don't even know what it was called in there. But it was like the Martian Manhunter, Shapeshifter. And it was green. And I'm like, seriously? You couldn't come up with something else? But that's what I felt like I was coming across a lot. A lot of things that, like, I've been here before. I've seen this. There's nothing original. Story was good. But those little things that I would nitpick.
Okay.
Yeah. Did I answer your question? No. You just asked me if I liked the book.
No, I asked you if it was
easy to follow.
Easy for you to get into not knowing anything about the backstory for a lot of these characters.
I didn't care to know about their backstory because I didn't know them. I knew the big guys. I knew the ones that mattered. At least to me.
Yeah.
Right? So I know Daredevil. I know the Tony Stark. I know Spider-Man. I knew the top guys.
Right.
I knew Captain America. But these little.
So with the top guys that you knew and what you know of them mostly from the Marvel movies.
Sorry to interrupt you. Like, for example, when they say that Tigra, I think that's her name, how she ended up being a mole.
Okay.
It had, perhaps if I would have known a little bit of her backstory and I would have been invested in her, it probably, her having been ousted as a, or revealed as a mole, it probably been, would have been more, it would have affected me rather than, okay, yeah, she's a mole, keep going. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I would have reacted to it a little bit more if I was a true follower of this particular character. Okay. But because the majority of them, I was like, meh, it was the big guys where I felt I was following.
And that's who you're meant to follow in this story. Oh. It was the big guys, okay. Yeah.
Well, then there you go.
So would it, did it motivate you to read something else? From reading this, is there any character in there where you're like, I'd like to follow what this guy's doing after this, or I'd like to see a little bit more of what happened in Spider-Man's life before or after this? Like, did any of that happen for you?
I think the natural response would be I would follow Spider-Man because I feel like I know more about him.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be easier to pick up something with his name on it. Because I'm not just familiar with him, I'm familiar with the people around him.
Right.
I know Aunt May. Yeah. I know Mary Jane. I know, yeah, you know, about,
you know, the key points in his life.
Yeah, I know about Gwen Stacy. Like, yeah. I know all that stuff. But if I was to try something completely out of my element, I'd probably get into, I'd probably, the way Captain America was written and how, like you said, how he seemed like the obvious person to be pro-government, but he went so the other way, and the way he was written and how he was so, the leadership that he displayed in this,
mm-hmm,
in this book, I don't know, I probably would pick up something of his.
The way Marvel is written, I think, knowing you, you would probably...
You said this to me.
Yeah, you...
Daredevil.
Absolutely Daredevil. I think you would like Marvel a lot more than you would realize. The way it's written, the way that they interact, the world that they're in, the continuity, how decisions affect other books, like you're always gonna like what your original love, right? I've grew up a DC guy and a Superman and Batman guy, and I'm loyal to that. I love my DC characters, all, like, I feel like I'm, that's the family. But when I ventured off and started reading Marvel, I realized just how good so much of that stuff was.
Mm-hmm.
and understood why people say Marvel, they take Marvel over DC. I got to see the actual wealth of stories in there. And the characters, there's so much more. The way that they were created, these characters were meant to have problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not just these iconic characters right from the start that are kind of godly. They're characters that have an issue in their life, and maybe an accident caused them to be a hero, but they want to do good with their powers. Or someone like you said, Captain America. The books that were coming out of Captain America at this time were phenomenal. I just started getting deep into them now.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Better than whatever DC was doing at the time. And I was all into DC at that time.
Mm-hmm.
This book here, I think, and I could be wrong, but I think it was the catapult for what's become of the Marvel movie universe, of making Captain America and Iron Man the figureheads. Because before this event, when I would think of Marvel, and I was somebody who wasn't familiar with Marvel except for Spider-Man, I loved Spider-Man. I read tons of Spider-Man, and that was it. So I thought of Marvel, I thought of Spider-Man, X-Men, Wolverine. I knew the Avengers were there, I knew Captain America and all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But this book here, I think, was the linchpin for what is Marvel today, Marvel now, because that's what they call it. There's New 52, and then there's Marvel Now. That's their line.
Right.
So I think this book was really that linchpin that did it. It's an important book. It's really good. Hopefully the movie will adapt it well. It's going to be difficult because they're not going to be able to use all these characters. There's going to be no Fantastic Four, no Spider-Man in it, which is huge.
Because they're different companies, right?
Right, different movie production companies. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting how they go about what the issue will be in their Civil War.
Overall, Because you asked me this. Mm-hmm. You asked me if I liked it. Or if I... And I feel like I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
How do I say this? I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't exactly pleased with how it ended. I felt actually, and not to be dramatic, but I was actually kind of mad.
That Captain America...
I was very disappointed with the ending. And almost not disappointed so much with the outcome of it, but... I felt bothered.
And that's the beauty of Marvel Comics. Is that... Not that it makes you feel bothered at the end.
Marvel Comics or comics in general?
Marvel Comics gets you invested in what happens to their characters. Because it affects an entire universe. It's not just... Like, you read Court of Owls and it affects Batman and affects Alfred and his family. This here affects Steve Rogers. It has ramifications on the X-Men. It had ramifications on Spider-Man. It had ramifications on Fantastic Four. Everybody who's involved in this event, it has a trickle effect of all of them.
Yeah, but they wrote it like that. They wrote it with all these characters in it. That's like you telling me that... DC with all of the Justice League, I could say the same thing.
Right, but Marvel was, the way it was built from the beginning was that all of their characters' lives have an effect in each other's lives. It's much more of a tighter universe. Whereas
DC, I don't know if I completely agree with that.
Well, you gotta read it to really feel it. Because what happens after this is a big event in Captain America's life. It picks up in his books and it's a whole... other thing, the chain of events that happens. So that's what I'm saying, the beauty of Marvel books is that something like this has a trickle effect through everything else. So whatever happens to Captain America will come through in the other books that you read. And you'll see there's a whole thing what happens to Spider-Man afterwards, etc., etc. Excuse me. So yeah, keep trying to give more Marvel books a chance. Don't go and read the hardest thing possible from way back in the day because you're not going to feel it.
You know what? I'm going to propose something.
Propose it.
If we have listeners.
Okay.
Who have been listening.
That's what they do.
And they're hearing this and they're saying, and based upon my likes and what I've expressed, whether it's knowledgeable or not, I would actually, I think, be willing to try a Marvel story that a listener would recommend.
There you go. There you have it. Daphne J, put it out there.
Because I don't know. And this is a fair, again, this is because I want to know who's listening. But at the same time, I don't have the knowledge to say, let me try this because I know it's going to be good. I've never done the Marvel thing. So I'm going to trust the opinion of some listeners out there that based upon what you guys are hearing and what I'm interested in, my likes, I'll take your advice to heart.
Can I be one of the recommendations?
No. Oh,
all right, fine. So please, somebody, that'd be amazing. Someone who has a recommendation for Daphne J. So before we end this episode, cause we're going a little bit longer than usual, you said to me that you hate in Arrow how everybody's getting to know who he is.
Yes!
Okay. Now you read this book and you see that so many heroes, their identities are being revealed.
Yeah.
So in comic books today, it's more and more common that people's identity, there's no longer a real need for secret identities the way it used to be. Tony Stark comes out. The end of his movie says, I am Iron Man, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone knows who Steve Rogers is. There's no secret about that. Black Widow. Everyone knows who the Black Widow is. So that whole thing about secret identities is becoming a thing of the past. And Matt Wagner, who is a comic book artist and writer, he was on a Batman panel, and he had made the comment that characters like Superman and Batman are eventually going to have to become... They can't be reinvented or updated that much further. Because the era we live in, it's kind of ridiculous to think that a secret identity could exist. Whereas in the past, back in the newspaper days of the 20s or the 30s, that could be something that people could suspend in their disbelief to think that this person has another identity. But in our day and age of instant information, phones at every person's pocket has a phone, social media, nobody would be able to keep up a secret identity. It'd be impossible. So do you think that this character like Batman or Superman will eventually become something like a Sherlock Holmes where their best story needs to be told in their era, in their time? You know, because there's only so much that you can update Superman without making Clark Kent just be everyone knows that he's Superman and making it believable. Because then it's going to get to the point where it's like, okay, this is ridiculous. How do they not know that this guy is him? Come on. He's not in town and that hero's not in town. All of a sudden he comes back and there's the hero. It goes for every character, really, even Oliver Queen and Arrow. It makes sense that people will figure out who he is pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's also insulting. Wouldn't you say it's kind of insulting to the audience? To make us think like, yeah, sure, glasses, no one knows who he is now. Come on. What do you think of that? Or what Matt Wagner said, that these characters like Superman and Batman specifically, they're being able to be updated is coming to an end very soon. What do you think?
So what you're asking me is, do I think that secret identities should just be non-existent?
Yeah, are they becoming kind of a useless storytelling thing? Like, it's almost, it comes to the point now, unless the person has a really good way of hiding who they are, it's almost like, come on, we're really gonna not know that this guy is Nightwing? Like, all he has is a little domino mask. Dick Grayson has long hair, Nightwing has long hair. Dick Grayson was an acrobat in the circus. Hey, look at this guy, he does all the same.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Why? How do you make it believable now? How do you make it
something? It's up to the writers. I think that for the audience to know who it is, it's privileged information.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So for us as readers, we have that nugget. We know who it is. We have information that nobody else has. As much as we love Jim Gordon, and he's a hero in his own way, we know something that he doesn't.
But that's the thing, is if you're going to write Jim Gordon, you can write that story. But that story works better if it's the 1940s Jim Gordon, 1950s Jim Gordon. Then you can believe, like, okay, this guy's a detective, but he's being fooled by a millionaire who has the resources. But in this day and age, if a guy is as good of a detective as Jim Gordon is, he should be able to figure out in about 2 days.
Not necessarily. If we're talking about this day and age, now, for example, and if I'm answering your question correctly, Oliver Queen has the equipment. He has the up-to-date advances of saying what he has to say with someone else's voice.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So let me ask you a question. You watch Arrow and you see Detective Lance, right? He's very close with the Arrow, right? And he sees Canary. He knows Canary is his daughter. And he sees Canary is teamed up with Arrow. And he has no idea who Arrow is because he has his voice modification thing. But he knows that his daughter is in close concert with him. And then his daughter, when she's not doing anything, is buddy-buddy and is everywhere with Oliver Queen. If you were Detective Lance, wouldn't you be able to put two and two together and say, wait a second, my daughter's moonlighting with the Arrow.
Yeah, but she...
But then when she's not with Arrow...
Okay, and it sounds naive, but again, I'm still hanging on to the secret identity thing because she... Okay, example, with Lance and his daughter. Yeah, she's always with Oliver all the time, everywhere. But she's living a double life. He knows that. So maybe her way of shielding or protecting her canary identity is to pretend to be this billionaire's something girlfriend type thing. So she's playing the part so that nobody ever associates her with Canary. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
I do, but I don't think it works. I don't think it would work.
Just like you're saying that she's always in cahoots, Canary's always in cahoots with Oliver, so they're like a tag team. She's probably playing the reverse and is always with, like, someone like Lance will probably see it that, well, she doesn't want everyone to know that she leads this life, so she's pretending to be the extreme. Just like Bruce Wayne, he's the smartest guy, he's a detective, he knows all these martial arts, he's been trained by the best in the world, but he goes in a meeting and he falls asleep. Or he just buys hotels just for fun. He's this douche that wrecks a car.
Right.
He has to pretend like he broke his car or whatever to just because now he's going to be in a cane for a couple of days. Because he actually went after, you know, he had a duel with Ra's.
But it's brought out in the Dark Knight movies, right? Where Lucius Fox says to him, he goes, listen, you don't want to tell me what you're doing. But don't think I'm an idiot. Lucius knows he's Batman.
Yeah, but without him ever Lucius saying, he sees his stuff out there. So right. Of course he's gonna put two and two. But that's his blueprint. Then, that's his signature stuff that he sees going off rooftops. Of course he's gonna put two together. But nobody else knows that.
But what about the other guy who's the accountant for Bruce Wayne, and he's able to put it together that Bruce Wayne is Batman?
He's a weasel.
Oh.
We're not even talking like.
So you still think that the secret identity is something that's possible for to be maintained?
If it's done correctly, yes.
You notice though that even in The Flash, he's constantly taking off his thing. Like it's
when
just,
he's on his own or with his friends.
He's even revealing himself to villains in the show. You might not have seen the episode, but he's never really hidden his secret identity to people he's encountering. It's just, I'm just getting to the thing, like...
Yeah, but I think, too, why do people have secret identities?
To protect their loved ones.
Right, he doesn't really have anyone. Well, he has Iris and the dad and la la la.
I'm just
like,
saying that in our modern world, telling the story with thinking that the audience could still stay on track, thinking that these secret identities type of thing, just a little mask and that kind of stuff still works. I think it's becoming a thing of the past. It's something that they're writing out slowly. Because really,
I don't know. I think
it's insulting when you think about it. It's becoming insulting to think that someone wouldn't figure that out. In Batman 66, when Dick Grayson puts on the little domino mask, we accept it. We're like, haha, no one knows. All it takes is this. But in today's world, we're like, come on. There's got to be something more.
Yeah, but
more.
It's a no. The
we can't just... you. If I had a full face mask on, you would know it's me. Like that.
No.
Yeah, absolutely you would know it's me.
I would know it was you by your teeth.
If I had a full face
That's
mask...
That's what I'm saying. If it's done right... You could do it if you modify your voice, if you put in, like, dentures and you change your dentition and, you know what I mean? If you're always clean shaven. But if you have a Ben Affleck butt chin, that's a dead giveaway.
But
that's what I'm saying. You can't hide that. But you just, if it's done properly,
How can it be done properly in today's modern world?
I just said.
So you're the next
Or moment. You just do a Spider-Man, you just do the whole shebang, cover everything. From soups to nuts. Pun intended.
All right. So you still think that the secret identity will work?
I think it's a necessary, valuable thing.
Okay.
And like I said, I think it gives the audience something that is theirs. They have this privileged information. That villains, allies, not even villains or allies have.
If you were a villain and you captured a hero, what would be the first thing you'd do? They're tied up, bound to a chair. Haven't you ever wondered why they just never pull off the mask? It always drives me nuts. Like, just
pull off. Can't with Batman. He always has like a gas.
Okay, fine. With Batman, he's got always something. But other guys, just doesn't drive me crazy.
And isn't Daredevil all the way? No, he shows his chin.
Yeah, but a lot of people know who Daredevil
is. Probably really,
actually,
really tight.
Daredevil in the comics now, everybody knows he's Matt Murdock. It's no longer a secret.
Everyone knows he's Matt Murdock. And okay, he can no longer so practice what? You law.
Think it shouldn't be there no more? No secret identities?
No, I'm just thinking that in today's world, it makes more sense when I'm reading something to know, like, yeah, of course everyone's going to know that this
guy's Daredevil. So then really, you're team Tony Stark.
No, I don't want... I'm not saying that they should be... But you're saying
it's not even necessary to have a secret identity.
No, I'm saying if I'm saying storytelling-wise.
Traitor.
I'm the traitor. I'm the mole. Well, it was very fun discussing Civil War with you. And I'm happy you read it. I'm happy you enjoyed it.
And I thought it was interesting.
Well, okay, yeah. You're never going to admit that you like the Marvel book yet. Don't worry, Batman's not listening. He's not real. So what's the next book you're going to read? You're going to go back to DC land?
I'm going to go back to the DC world, but I will pick up another Marvel.
I like it.
Based on a viewer or a listener's recommendation.
Very I'll nice.
Give it a shot.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. This is The Cave of Solitude. I'm Eric Anthony.
I'm Daphne J.
You can email us at caveofsolitude@outlook.com. We're on iTunes at Cave of Solitude. We've also got the website, caveofsolitude.com.
Yeah.
Instagram. Same thing, cave_of_solitude. Look us up, send us a comment, an email, anything you like. Hopefully you're listening and enjoying the show. If you're ever in the Toronto area and you need to go to a local comic book shop, Cyber City Comics is the spot. The owner there is Daryl. He's an awesome guy. It's a great store. Get a membership. You get great discounts. And it's located in the North York area, Steeles and Bathurst. It's my home store. I love it there. Thank you again for listening, everybody. Signing off. We will see you soon, and we will respond to your email for the daily promise.
Ciao.